This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. Now, Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio gets the job done right with help from our trusted contributors at the Ontario College of Trades.
Welcome back, and we are back with our trusted contributors from the Ontario College of Trades. I'm going to give you the numbers. If you have questions, 416-360-0740 or toll-free 1-866-740-4740. And we've all been there, at least those of us who are not mechanically savvy. I'm certainly in that group. Your warranty's expired. You're trying to find a certified mechanic, or you're talking to a mechanic and you have no way of knowing whether your car actually needs the expensive work that he is telling you it needs. So how do you make sure you're not being taken for a ride? Pardon the bad pun. I'm here with trusted contributors Jamie Holmes, a certified automotive service technician, and Sherry Haig from the Ontario College of Trades. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for having us.
So,
Maybe first thing we can talk about is just the fact that, I mean, as a woman, but anyone who goes into an automotive shop, I've always had that worry of, okay, what are they doing to it, and are they really going to fix it? I have no idea what they've done. Is this person someone I can trust? And now, for the first time in Ontario, you can actually check and ask if they have a CFQ, and they have to show that to you. And that's part of it, is at the Ontario College of Trades, you can actually check online to make sure and say, show me your name, show me your certification, and then actually confirm it. So this is a big peace of mind. It doesn't mean that you're going to get your car fixed the way you wanted it, but at the very least, it's giving you that extra assurance that the person is qualified.
So it's called what? A CFQ?
What's a certification of qualification? So, and that's involves, and Jamie can speak to this, many, many hours of apprenticeship and the level of expertise and knowledge that you now need to fix a car and to do this type of work is quite incredible. So you really want to make sure that person has been trained, and they're required by law to be trained, to have that CFQ. So if they don't, they shouldn't be working on your car. And that's when you can call us, and we'll come in and check. So also, for the first time in Ontario, we have enforcement officers that go in and check to make sure that the people that are working in those shops are working legally and protecting you.
And how big a problem is it? How many were there a lot of mechanics working without the certification, without the proper background?
Oh, many. Many, lots and much of many. The one thing people may be concerned about asking someone for their certificate of qualification or their membership card from the Ontario College of Trades. They think, oh, well, that will that offend them? Well, actually, no, it won't. They'll be pleased to show it to you. They'll be pleased to show you that they're qualified and they've met the requirements and they've challenged the exam successfully, and that they put in, 8,000 to 9,000 hours that it was required to get that qualification. So,
and how about upgrading those things? Because I know the cars get more complicated every year.
Yeah, they do. Training is offered by not necessarily the manufacturers directly, but they're offered through other channels. And most qualified technicians want to make sure that they keep their skills up, so they're constantly taking upgrading and training. I know myself. I would take 60 to 80 hours of training per year.
Wow.
In order to stay on top of things, you have to. You have no choice. You'd be left behind if you don't.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things we're also doing at the college, is modernizing training curriculum for not just the automotive sector, but for 156 different trades, where for decades, some of these trades have been completely ignored. And the standards and apprentices were not learning with being in touch with what's actually happening out there in the workforce. So we've started doing that. So hopefully the new generation coming in, too, are also being trained with the cutting-edge technology that now is utilized.
Okay, let's give out the numbers again in case people have questions about what their mechanics are telling them or anything to do with the mechanics on their car or any other questions about trades, actually. 416-360-0740 or toll-free 1-866-740-4740. And the cars are so computerized now. Mm-hmm. So what difference does that make? And I know I got a new car and there's a problem, actually, just with my clock on the car. And I went and I was hoping that they could fix it when, you know, they put on my spring tires. And they said, it's a software problem and we're not getting a fix until July. I mean, how mm-hmm. common is that?
You know what? It's actually very common because, as you said, the vehicles are very computerized. Depending upon what kind of vehicle that you have, you'll probably have at least a minimum of three, you know, logic type boxes, totaling up to maybe 40 and 50 in some brands. And they all talk to each other on a network, just like computers, you know, do as we are used to in our homes and our businesses. But in many cases today, software fixes are the way to go. You know, they're able to fine tune. However, you know, you still need to do maintenance. You still need to repair mechanical problems. Things still do wear out no matter what. It's still a mechanical device no matter how much electronics you put out on the outside of it. However, versus 30 or 40 years ago where perhaps someone who was maybe a little bit more, you know, working with their hands, I'm just speaking of the automotive industry, you need some mathematical, a little bit of critical thinking skills in order to be able to solve today's problems effectively on vehicles, simply because you have to understand how they work. Mm-hmm. It's not just a matter of, you know, tinkering and tinkering and tinkering. Sometimes it's a little more involved. You know, many times it's a lot more involved than that.
And there are certainly a lot of horror stories. I mean, when you ask about numbers, so we're just starting to get out there, and we have found 2,500 instances of people that were unauthorized working just to...
Wow.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that was just 2015, and that's just us touching the surface. And some of the examples of what we've seen is brake pads put on backwards, water put in brake fluid. We're talking about things that actually can put you at risk. Mm-hmm. So this is serious business.
That's right.
Sorry, so, I mean, how does that happen? I mean, how does somebody, is it somebody who trained a long time ago, or I'm just not even wrapping my head around it.
Well, what happens is that in many cases, people think, well, you know, what can I do to make a living for myself or whatever the case may be, and they just turn around. And they go and open a shop. I mean, if you're with the certain cities or municipalities, it's a matter of paying a fee to get a public garage license, and as long as the fire department approves you, away you go. They don't ask to see a certificate of qualification, you know, because it's outside of their purview. It's not what they do. They're not there to protect the public. They're there to collect licensing dollars. And therefore, you know, anybody could walk in the street and think, oh, I can fix a car. I know how to, you know, do that.
Are the, now that you have these certifications, are the municipalities on board? Are they checking this as well now or not?
No, this is just us.
That's
and
just the
first
Ontario
time
College.
This is happening. So
yeah, this is brand new. The other thing too that people also have to understand, and also, you know, those people who are tradespeople have to understand, is there's now an organization that is looking after them as a whole to ensure that standards are being met. You know, and that, and I mean, you know, a long time ago we would, you know, customers would sometimes ask you to do things that were questionable, you know, specifically in regard to safety standards inspections, and we would say, no, I can't do that. There are laws in place. You know, we have to follow the rules and the regulations. And they say, ah, you know, who's going to know? Well, now there is an organization that's going to know, and you will be censured if you mm-hmm. go out of bounds.
Yeah, and even at the College of Trades, we actually partnered with the police on where we went in. It was an auto body shop in Guelph, and believe it or not, they were fixing taxis and falsifying safety certificates. And these were people that had no business touching cars. So we went in, we charged them. Police got involved as well, too.
And like, was the taxi company in collusion with them? You'd have
they
to
had
think
no
so.
Idea. So they just thought they were getting these cars fixed, and they had safety, so they figured they're fine. Mm-hmm. Wow. Scary stuff.
It's scary stuff. We're going to have to take a quick break. I'm going to give out the numbers again before we take that break. 416-360-0740 or toll-free 1-866-744-740. I'm here with the trusted contributors from the Ontario College of Trades, and we're talking about making sure that you have a qualified mechanic working on your car, how you can determine that, and what happens if you don't. We'll be back after this.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back. I'm here with our trusted contributors from the Ontario College of Trades. The numbers, if you have questions about auto mechanics and anything else they deal with, 416-360-0740 or toll-free 1-866-744-740. And I have Milton in St. Catharines. Hi, Milton.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
I'm doing great, thank you. I'd like to bring a point about dealers.
Okay.
Okay, they have all the equipment to be able to read the codes in the cars when they go wrong, and that's fine and dandy. The thing with dealers is that they charge through the ceiling. They have ridiculous prices.
Uh-huh.
The second thing is, for every job that they do, they put a time limit on it. So if it's a task like, say, doing a brake job, and they have to pull a rotor in and it's rusted, and it takes time, they put this mechanic under all sorts of pressure and strain, and makes it difficult for him to do a proper job. So that's one thing that's wrong, and that's why I have gone around and found a small shop. I'm fortunate in St. Catharines that does all these things. His problem is that although he's got a computerized system that he can read the codes on the car, there are certain things that he can't do, like I have to have my dashboard replaced, and he had to take it back to the original dealer after he had replaced the dashboard to get it restarted, to get it booted up. So this is something that these people say that, you know, it's bad tradesmen, but it's not always that.
Okay, I can see Jamie here shaking his head. So, Milton, let's hear what Jamie has to say about what you're
up. you brought up some good points, Milton. There's no doubt about it. But several things. Number one, if the technician and the service advisor are communicating properly, number one, they should be estimating the job correctly. So if you have a part that's excessively rusted or whatever the case is going to take extra time, that needs to be communicated back and forth between them, and it needs to be communicated to you as the client as more time that's required that unfortunately will, of course, equate to costing you more money, number one. Number two, though, as far as not having access to information, as a matter of fact, we're very fortunate here in Canada that we do have access to information from all the dealers. And if your technician is keeping up to date and also, unfortunately, investing in technology, we have access to virtually everything that the dealership has. We can reprogram cars. We can reflash software. We can, bring dead devices to life, so to speak, stuff that's out of the box, and get it communicating. Now, the thing is, though, depending upon what make of vehicle you have, it may or may not be make financial sense for your technician or the shop to invest in that. I mean, if they only have two or three customers with a specific brand of car, they're not going to spend $1,500 or $2,000 on a piece of equipment to be able to do that. But if you have something that's more common, all of our shops, they all do it. You have to.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. So there's you need different equipment for every different kind of car?
Yes.
Yeah, in many cases you do. Yeah.
Shows how much I know.
Yeah, I mean we can sometimes, I mean, to have $30,000 or $40,000, $50,000 tied up in diagnostic equipment is not uncommon.
This is a fact that both my vehicles are North American vehicles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this guy, he's a franchise, okay?
Yeah.
Part of a darn good franchise, because everybody you talk to that deals with this particular franchise, no matter where in Ontario, they're all very satisfied with them. But even they can't keep up. They don't have have the resources to do like what I told you.
Right. Well, that's fine. But what I'm saying is, especially if it's a North American vehicle, I can tell you for a fact that to be able to program any GM, Ford, and Chrysler, I can do that with about $1,800 worth of equipment plus a software subscription of about $35 per day.
Well, if my idling goes squirrely or whatever, mm-hmm. I mean, he can plug that in, and he can get that sorted out right away because he has the diagnostic equipment, and, mm-hmm. and he can reboot it. Okay. But he could not fire up my entire dashboard.
I don't know why.
Well, because he said he had to take it in there because they were the only ones that had it. It wasn't available to them.
Okay, well.
Okay, so be it.
Very okay. Well. Thanks for your call. I think that alerted.
One more point.
Yeah.
When he said that these people are not, you know, they can talk back and forth if there's a problem when they're doing the job. That doesn't happen. This was another dealer with another car company, but also North American. And I had a crack in my battery from the day I bought it. And they would never, ever replace it. They kept on saying, oh, no, there's nothing wrong with it. Mm-hmm. You could see the acid buildup. I'd wipe it away. They said, oh, no, that's your fault because you should have left it. And eventually it ate away the terminal. And it ate away the cable.
Yeah, well,
the
that unfortunately, that's an issue between the service advisors.
That's
so
North American issues with North American dealers. That's what I'm trying to point out to you.
Well, that's the dealer network. That's that falls. That's just poor business practice. That's not within the purview of the College of Trades.
That's not just one shop that did that to me. That was three different dealers.
Well,
the same company.
Maybe you need to deal with some different dealers.
There's
Milton,
also
thanks.
Omvik that deals. Omvik. Omvik oversees.
Okay, I'll let you go.
Yeah.
Thanks. Thank you. Bye-bye.
And just one other thing to clarify from the gentleman earlier when he talked about a lot of bad tradespeople. On the contrary, there's actually many, many skilled tradespeople out there. What we're talking about are the bad apples that we don't mm-hmm. want people to get stuck with.
let's take another call. We have Suzanne waiting in Hamilton. Hi, Suzanne.
Hey, good afternoon. How are you today?
Fine. How are you?
I'm just fine. Thank you. I just want to say I'm involved in the trades. I'm a horticulturalist, and I did go through the trades school. And the people that are there that are the enforcement officers, first of all, I think that going to the garages, I've never been to a single garage that doesn't have the fellas' credentials posted on the wall someplace. And if they're not posted on the wall someplace, then you kind of know you're not dealing with someone on the up and up. And if you know that because you're going there because it's cheaper and it's the backyard mom and pop operation, and you go there and you know what you're getting, you know what you're being paid for or you're paying for. So there's that kind of thing. I mean, today's mechanic can't go out and, you know, afford all this equipment for diagnosing these vehicles. And since we're all forced to buy these new vehicles with electronic systems in it, then it kind of, you know, you gotta know and have the money to do this. So anyway, the qualifications are posted. It sounds like the enforcement folks, it's just another layer of government job creation for those people. Better that the enforcement officials go to the people that are hiring these apprentices or training these apprentices and make sure they're getting the correct training. Oftentimes, and not necessarily in the mechanic situation or electrical engineers, plumbers, etc., but in horticulture, I can tell you that there's a lot of people that are being hired that through the schooling, and they're not learning what they should be. So if they want to enforce something, please enforce it at the educational level and not at the bottom line, going around and busting people for, you know, not being certified. And because people that are going there know that the person is or isn't certified, because the qualifications with regard specifically to mechanics, auto mechanics, you know that you're getting a qualified mechanic. I had electricians come in and redo wiring in my house, and they didn't even do it right, and they were supposedly qualified. I saw their qualifications. They still did it wrong.
Okay. We'll give them a chance to respond. Thanks, Suzanne, for your call.
Yeah, just a couple of points on that. One, absolutely, there's many people that do not check CFQ. I certainly didn't, and frankly, most of the people I know wouldn't. Perhaps because you're in the trades, you might think you are a little more conscious about doing that. So, and because we've had so many examples that have led to public safety, it's actually critical to be out there going after people that are improperly fixing cars. That's a public safety issue, not just for the person that bought the car, but for the other victims on the road if that car goes off the road. But a good point on the apprenticeship, and frankly, that's one area that we are doing, and enforcement does play a big role in that, which is really helping the apprentices through the system and making sure they are getting trained. But once again, I go back to what we said. When government was in charge, there was actually no one was upgrading curriculum. We've upgraded curriculum that hadn't been touched in 20 years, 20 years. So we've had some really blocks and gaps in training, and that's actually what we are doing, and that is a big part of also what enforcement does. In fact, their goal is actually to bring people into compliance more than to issue tickets. We're here just to make sure that everybody's qualified. Sometimes people just need to go write their CFQ. They have the years. We have a process to help them through that to actually get there. So there's a lot more that we're doing. Enforcement is really the last resort, and that's why we're here today, is to talk about, you know, making sure that we do all we can from a prevention point of view.
And do you have people who are running those mom and pop shops who are trying to get their certifications?
Yeah, a number of them do. In many cases, what we found, certainly in the past, not necessarily moving ahead, is that the people who are, as Sherry said, who haven't gone and haven't challenged the exam to obtain their certificate of qualification are people who struggle somewhat academically. Fortunately, the college has put measures in place in order to kind of level the playing field, if you will, and to give these people more support and encourage them to come and to challenge the exam. And if they're not successful in doing that, they're able to give them assistance as to in areas where they have had difficulty. To ensure that they will be successful.
Is language ever an issue where you have people who are perhaps new immigrants and don't know English that well, don't want to take an exam in English?
I'm sure there probably are some, yeah.
Yeah, there are. One of the things that we do is we have a process called T, which is a trade equivalency assessment. And, for example, I had a guy at an auto body shop that called me and said he has one of his mechanics who, you know, he wants him to be legal and he's worried about writing the exam. And same thing, his English isn't great. But we also have people that speak multiple languages at the college. And we offer counseling and we actually help that person get through that process and to change their life. And they never had that before.
Okay, well, I'm just going to give the numbers again. We only have a few more minutes, but in case there are more questions about certification, about making sure that you are getting the proper work on your car, 416-360-0740 or toll-free 1-866-740-4740. And just before, you were telling me about a case, this is really scary, of a school bus, that a fleet of school buses that were fixed by people who weren't qualified.
Yes, I mean, that's the other point is, you know, you can say, oh, well, everyone knows. Well, actually, they don't. And when you get to something involving the safety of children, so we had a complaint that we followed up on. And frankly, you know, we plan on doing a lot more in that area because that's a pretty critical area of safety. So,
and you're saying the school bus company didn't know that they were dealing with people who were not certified.
Right. So we're actually now going to do a little more proactive with school boards to educate them about who they're hiring, making sure that that these buses are being fixed by people that know what they're doing.
Really? That is extremely scary.
It's astounding when you think about it. But now there is actually somebody watching over this. Mm-hmm. It's about time.
Before that, no one had anywhere. They didn't know where to go.
They didn't know where to go.
Well, there wasn't anyone, right? Yeah. It was the Ministry of Transport or whatever the case was, and their investigational abilities are great, but you know it's a big province.
And somebody handing out a contract for school buses didn't think to check anything?
Well, what happens is they may hire, and there may be some people that are qualified. And frankly, this was the case. It was a whistleblower that called that said, you know, I'm a licensed mechanic, but there's someone else here that's doing work and they're not qualified.
Right. Or they would have a single license within the shop, someone who has challenged successfully met the qualifications, but they may have six other people working there. All operating under that individual's license, you see. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so when someone says, oh, well, you know, the certificate's on the wall, that's great, but whose certificate is on the wall? And who's actually working on your car? You can't, any of the compulsory trades, you cannot work for any longer than 3 months unless you are a qualified individual or you are a registered apprentice. So ensuring that you're being trained properly.
Okay, so that's another question for people to ask when they see the certificate on the wall saying, is this the guy doing the work?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And as I said, don't be afraid to ask, because anybody who is certified or who is a registered apprentice will be pleased to show you proof, because they are proud to have the qualification. It's an earned, you know, it's an earned
Sounds like a lot of hours.
It is. It's years of training.
Yeah, well, when I did my apprenticeship a while ago.
And are you up to date?
yeah, I am actually up to date. My apprenticeship has started out at 10,000 hours. Just over 5 years to become a certified automotive technician.
Well, that's what they say. That's the Malcolm Gladwell thing, 10,000 hours for you to become expert in something.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yeah, very much so.
Okay, well, that is all the time we have for today. Thank you so much to our trusted contributors from the Ontario College of Trades, Jamie Holmes and Sherry Haig.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.